Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, Valentine's Day, the 14th day of February. Bill Krause is our guest for all things political this Monday morning. He was press secretary for former Wisconsin Governor Lee Dreyfus, and he is also a board member of Common Cause in Wisconsin. We asked him to be on the show because we anticipated that there would be a good deal of state news to discuss today, and indeed, there is a good deal of state news to discuss today, although there was huge news from Egypt as well last week, and we'll ask Bill to comment on that, as well as other issues. He's a guy who's always up on the news. We are state employees here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I am not a member of a union, nor are people who work on this program, but the governor on Friday sent a message to state workers talking about the challenges that the state will face over the next 2 years. He says the state faces a biennial budget deficit of $3.6 billion. He went on to say, in the days ahead, some may attempt to misrepresent reform measures, spreading inaccurate or misleading information. To ensure you know the facts, I would like to proactively address these issues. And he talked about vacation and sick leave policy. The areas that have received the most attention are pension contributions and health insurance contributions from state employees. The amount, he writes in his letter, is estimated to be 5.8% of salary for 2011, which is about the national average for private sector employees and health insurance contributions. Currently, state employees paying 6% of annual health insurance premiums, and this would go up to 12%. What's created the most stir is the area of collective bargaining. The bill, the governor states, makes various changes to limit collective bargaining to the base pay rate. Total increases cannot exceed the consumer price index unless approved by a referendum. Contracts will be limited to 1 year and wages will be frozen until the new contract is settled. Collective bargaining units will have to take annual votes to maintain certification as union. Employers will be prohibited from collecting union dues, and members of collective bargaining units will not be required to pay dues. These changes take effect upon the expiration of existing contracts. Local police and fire employees and state patrol troopers and inspectors are exempted from these challenges. The governor says, we all recognize these are historic times that require us to rethink how government operates. I ask that we continue to work together to do what is necessary to bring the state spending in line with the taxpayers' ability to pay. So what do you think? A lot of people are very upset about this. We've heard from many of them. The state AFL-CIO has started a campaign, television and radio campaign. The Club for Growth, a conservative organization, has also started a campaign. And a lot of people are expressing their viewpoints, and you're welcome to do so this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Bill Krause, a pleasure to have you on the air again, sir. Happy Valentine's Day.
And to you, Kathleen.
Thank you very much. I think one of the things that upsets people, in addition to many other things, is that it's not like let's sit around the table and discuss what we can do to get the state out of this crisis. How much more should we pay for health insurance? What should unions do? There doesn't seem to be this spirit of collaboration. Did you see that? Is there one?
Well, I don't see any. What appeared to me is that he's had years of frustration at the county exec level, where he would make proposals and the county board would reject them, or he'd make vetoes and they'd override them. And suddenly, he's got a docile legislature, and he can do whatever he wants. It's almost totalitarian, and it's a result of that election last fall. So I don't know whether the people are getting what they wanted, but they're getting desperate measures in what he describes as desperate times. So there's certain personal factors that play into this, but it's a very radical proposal. He doesn't go back to the 1990s. He goes back to the 1930s on labor agreements, and he's got, as anybody else would have had, anecdotal stories about abuses of tenure and abuses of this and abuses of that. And he's coming after him with a sledgehammer, and who knows? I have trouble believing that the state is that radical, but he's going to do it. And what we criticized Doyle about was he didn't take advantage of the crisis to do things he could have done. He instead slipped around and patched together budgets. He got out of town mm-hmm. with a free pass. And to his credit, Walker knows he can't do that and is going to take drastic action.
Yeah. And why so quickly? We got the announcement on Friday. There will be some kind of hearings tomorrow, but he wants this to be voted on Thursday for such, as you call, radical action. Why so fast?
Because that compact he's got with that legislature is going to erode over time. Their mm-hmm. egos are going to get engaged, and their constituents are going to come after them, and their courage level is going to drop precipitously. So as a tactic, it's a smart thing to do. Do it fast and get it over with. Get it behind you. You know, that in the olden days, when we had much more manageable crises, we always raised taxes the first month. Because maybe they'll forget it in two or four years.
Yeah, I see that point. There are legislators, though, according to some information I have this morning, 7 state legislators, one organization says, are currently listed as being on the fence about the vote. Do you think there are that many senators who are on the fence?
I don't know. Where we see it most clearly is in Washington, where Washington seems to be headed for a three-party system.
Mm.
And as you know, a three-party system, all that power devolves on the third party because they've got the balance of power. So I haven't seen that here.
Mm-hmm.
And he has certainly got the upper hand, and he is the reason a lot of these people are here. And they know that.
Right.
And he's going to, he's figured it out. It ain't easy, but he's figured it out.
And when he talks about the crisis that we're in and the debt that we face and the budget deficit of $136.7 million to the end of this year, is he right to look at state employees? Are we a big part of the reason that the state is in so much debt, do you think, Bill?
No, it isn't, but what you are is an easy, you're the low-hanging fruit. The big trouble is in Medicaid, corrections, K-12. That's where the money is, and those have to be faced if you really want to shrink the role and the cost of government. But state employees are an easy target.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is it breaks the tacit pact that the governors have always had with state employees. They say, you're not going to be the best paid people in the world, but you're going to have a lot of job security, and
right.
you're going to have great benefits.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you're not getting more pay, but he's going after that. And it's there to be had. As you know, I was a state employee for a while. It was a sweet pension deal, and the health care deal is better than you see in the private sector.
Sure
but the
is.
Private sector used to command higher salaries. So a lot of the sand has shifted. The private sector doesn't seem to have that income advantage that they used to have. And they look at the state employees and say, wait a minute, that's my money.
Right. So if you were at the table, and I don't know who else you'd put at the table, but, well, that's, I guess I ought to ask you that question. Who would you put at the table to figure out how we're going to take care of those huge expenses, which are important? Medicaid, K-12 education, corrections facilities. How are we to fund those? Who needs to give? What are we missing here?
Well, what we need, it's so hard to say. There are experts on all of those fields, and there are places where things are handled more efficiently and at a lower cost. So you got some models around. Well, Tommy was the model for welfare reform. And certainly somewhere, somebody has figured out what are you going to do about Medicaid. I think that The strange thing is that the federal health care bill will attack Medicaid head on.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guys who are people who are opposing that, I'd like the Chamber of Commerce people to take another look. That has some very favorable implications for state government and for business and their competitiveness in a worldwide market. But they've gotten tangled up in socialism and emotionalism and death panels and all this baloney. And, you know, we're a 30-second society, Kathleen, and we go, slogans dominate our lives.
Right.
And it's stupid is what it is.
Mm-hmm. What about eliminating police and firefighters from this? Why did that happen?
Well, it's his reading of people's priorities. What somebody in the Department of Health and some clerical person in the Department of Health and Services is invisible to the voter. The police, fire, cops are, and crime. Crime is always the excuse for doing anything. It's bleeding into the Supreme Court race already, where it has little or no impact. So they're grabbing at things that people that resonate. And what you don't want is you don't want the organized firefighters and police people against you, so you take them out of the game.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is going to create a situation sometime this week where people will walk off their jobs? A lot of teachers are very upset.
Well, they certainly have that right. I doubt that they will. You walk off your job. You're in this economy, you aren't walking into it much.
Right.
So you want to roll that dice, you go ahead. And he's taking terrible risks with the long-term relationship with those people. And once if he does figure out the real problems, our benefits, not wages, the state government is not a labor-intensive business.
Mm-hmm.
Once he settles, takes the low-hanging fruit, goes after the stuff that really is killing us, I think he'll be back and say, okay, you guys, thank you for sacrificing. I'll be able to take care of you now, I think. I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to wonder, I think what you said is very true, that we don't get paid all that much money, but we do have good benefits. I've used that line with my friends frequently. Yeah, we have good benefits, and yeah, everybody should have good benefits as far as I'm concerned. But it makes you wonder, who the heck's going to go into employment for the state?
That's
if
right.
Really, who would do it?
That's right. The talent, when you take away that selling point, you take away one of the great advantages. And job security used to be also a huge thing going to state. I have to insert a personal note. I worked in the insurance business many, many years, and many years ago. Insurance companies did the same thing. They said, okay, you're not going to get paid the way the guy down the street selling widgets is, but we're gonna take care of you. And those contacts are any business that pretty much is automatic, like government, uses that bargaining tool, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
But when you take it away unilaterally, that is really it's breaking faith with a long term. Commitment. But Jim Doyle broke faith, I thought, with a long-term commitment to these local governments.
Mm-hmm.
That deal was cut in 1911 when they said, if you guys will go along with the income tax, we'll take care of you. Well, they didn't take very good care of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you can imagine, we have all four phone lines ringing. So,
I'm here for a lot of my friends in Madison. You didn't give me a chance to give you my great one-liner.
Yeah, please.
Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
I got a call from a friend in Milwaukee saying, what is Madison's reaction to the Walker administration? And I said, are you familiar with the Edvard Munch painting, The Scream?
Yeah, I'll bet that's a reaction. Let's go to phone calls. Reed in Clintonville. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Reed.
thank you for the opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
First, let me just say that I emailed the governor the very first time on January 3rd. I have called his office. Actually, I called again this morning four times. I have yet to receive any response from the governor.
Well, I would imagine they're busy today.
Well, today I suspect they are.
Yeah.
But I suspect I will never receive a response from him because I'm of no consequence to him. I just wanted to comment on the fact that the governor threatened to call out the National Guard, which smacks of, and I think he is the embodiment of this, of the beginnings of a repressive and regressive regime by a mean-spirited man who very much mimics dictators in third world countries.
Whoa, that's pretty strong, Bill.
Yeah, it's pretty strong. The I want to go back to his original complaint about accessibility. At this time in his life, there, you know, the phones are ringing off the wall and people are marching in the streets. He's almost like the president of Egypt. He's
right.
Under siege, and they aren't going to be able to answer questions. If one of the failures of the Doyle administration was a lack of accessibility over the entire span, accessibility, you cannot measure how important that is to the, well, how you're regarded in the general population.
Mm.
And it's just a matter of answering the phone,
mm-hmm.
and returning phone calls and responding quickly and decisively to issues. With, the DNR gets the bad rap on this, that they're deaf to anything. And when Lee was governor, Tony Earle was head of DNR. And he and I put together a system that any complaints I got, I went to him. Any complaints he got, he went to me. So we had about four over 2 years, and three of them were from crackpots, and the other one we fixed. So that you just mute those things by answering the phone and being there. I think a lot of the Tea Party, this guy talks like a Tea Party person. Nobody's paying any attention to me, and they aren't. And that'll be a big mistake if he doesn't repair that or set up a system, a responsive system.
And how true that Governor Dreyfus knew how to do that. He just, you know, if you were a Democrat or a Republican, people admired him for that very reason. He was a great speaker, but he was incredibly accessible.
He was. He was accessible, and he sought out people. And he didn't go out and give speeches. He went out and asked questions.
Mm.
Big difference.
Bill Krause is our guest for all things political, and we're centering, as we expected you would want to talk about, the governor's statements, the budget repair bill that were issued last Friday, and anticipating that, we scheduled Bill for this morning. And it's a good thing we did, because there are many of you who would like to speak to this. We have one line open, 800-486-8655 is our number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill Krause, our guest for all things political, former press secretary for Governor Lee Dreyfus, and also board member of Common Cause. Here's an email that's come in from Arlen. Don't you feel that the majority of people, the majority of voters in Wisconsin, Bill, agree with Governor Walker's initiative to require public sector workers to contribute more of their own money to their own retirement and health insurance benefits since they elected him as our new governor?
I think they probably do, but they aren't. They didn't cut those bargains that created that system, and aren't familiar with it. So everybody's got a beef, and well-paid, comfortable, secure state employees in difficult times are going to catch it from the general populace, where there's a lot less safety and security and surety.
Mm. Yeah. Steve in Madison, hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
First of all, based on what you were saying before, just now, I did have a quick comment about, I think, the teachers' union. That's one thing that people see, and people feel the teachers are overpaid and the union is too strong. So that, I don't know, it's a nice whipping boy. But the comment I really had to make was, I'm a state retiree, But I worked for over 20 years for the state retirement system. And so people would come to me, and they still come to me with, you know, basic questions about the way the retirement system works and such as that. And I can tell you that there have been a lot more. I've had friends come up to me, both state employees and public sector employees outside the state, who are saying, you know, I like my job, I don't want to quit, but I don't know what's going to happen in the next month or the next 6 months, so, you know, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we will be losing a lot of expertise, and there are people, many, many state employees, who just cannot be replaced by the National Guard. I mean, that's an absurd option. So, all right.
Thank you, Steve, for
listening to me talk.
Yes, of course. That's why we're here. Thank you, Bill.
Well, I think that is a risk he takes, that it's a qualitative risk. People who have skills that can be marketed elsewhere get uncomfortable, are going to leave. I think Wisconsin is the pension of this guy created, the pension system that he created in his 20 years, is funded and safe. Other states, they're going back on those contractual promises, and I don't know how they're going to get by with that, but you guys had the Milwaukee disaster years ago, so maybe you know how to do it. But I think the pensions are safe, so that's off the table. But definitely you're flirting with not having the attractions that you used to have.
Right. Let's go next to David in Madison. Hi, David.
Hi, thank you so much for taking the call and for having your guest this morning. My comment would be that I think that Governor Walker is counting on a lot of ignorance of some history. The idea of state workers paying, you know, roughly 6% and 12% on retirement and health sounds so eminently reasonable. What it ignores, though, is the history of labor negotiations beginning with the UAW late in World War II, Walter Reuther getting a deal from GM when price and wage controls were in place for benefits, which was the beginning of health-related benefits to work. And so in Wisconsin, the unions have been very smart in getting increases in their benefit package, pension and health, that are not taxable. So it's a great tax benefit to have that. So the difference in pay with wages has not kept up with the private sector because wages are taxed, whereas the benefits aren't. So Walker is counting on, you know, the 30-second time frame, and it sounds so reasonable. But what that ignores is the history and the fact that workers, apples to apples is one thing. He's doing apples to oranges and counting on everybody just assuming that it's, well, it's all fruit. So that's my comment, that dynamic has been left out by Governor Walker, who perhaps never did get to that history course at Marquette. Thank you.
Thanks, David, for the call.
I think I agree with that. That was the deal, and Milwaukee had a crisis because of it. I remember years ago the city of Beloit was trying to declare bankruptcy because what they had done to keep their immediate costs down is they had promised benefits after retirement, and then they dropped the retirement age, and these became just simply unsustainable.
Mm.
And so they said, we can't do that, but they made those kinds of deals, and it's very attractive to a sitting politician not to be accused of paying too much for public workers. It's a point. The press is notoriously, I accuse them for 4 years of having an instinct for the capillary. They keep going after stuff like that without putting it in the kind of context the caller put it in. That's the way that the game was played. And the governor is changing the rules.
You talk about this compact going back to the 1930s in the state of Wisconsin. What's the story legally with this? Is this something that the legislature can easily approve? Will there be a court challenge that could be meaningful or not?
Well, I it's a labor law, and the state of Wisconsin in the Knowles years permitted authorized collective bargaining for the first time. That incidentally was over one of your Milwaukee and dead bodies. George Kaiser said, "You're going to pay a terrible price for this." Well, maybe we have, maybe not. In any event, I think that what the law said was the law cannot, can no longer be applied. You can make a new law. I don't think it's constitutional. I don't think he has a constitutional problem with what he is proposing. He is changing the rules of collective bargaining, the subjects of collective bargaining for state employees. And I don't see any constitutional question involved in that. The labor laws are labor laws. They're not in the Constitution.
I see. Lori is next. David, thank you. Lori in Cudahy. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for this program. I agree that state employees could do something to help with their pension contributions and their health care contributions. Are the governor and legislature being asked to do the same thing? That's my question. Collective bargaining? You gotta be kidding. I'm 78 years old. I never thought I would see this in my lifetime. It is embarrassing, and I'm ashamed of what is happening right now. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for the call.
I think that's an interesting idea. I think Walker put himself on a salary diet when he was in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature is funded pretty generously, both in terms of they're supposed to be a part-time legislature, but they get the money up there. So if you'll live abstemiously, you can make it a full-time job. But what they really put money into is their own staffs. It'll be very interesting to see if what the governor proposes there and whether the two Fitzgeralds come up with an initiative of their own to say, okay, everybody's going to feel pain, including us. And that we'll find out when the budget comes up.
So they have fairly large staffs?
Oh, yeah, there's a caucus staff. I'll take you back more years than you want to remember. when Harry Franke was elected to the Assembly in the 50s,
he
shared an office with Gaylord Nelson, who was a senator from the other party, and they had one secretary between them.
Huh.
So things have changed very generously.
And did they do okay, Bill?
They got along just fine.
Oh, my goodness, what happened to those days, sir?
That's right.
Thanks, Lori, very much for the call. Let's go next to Rose in Menomonee Falls. Hi, Rose.
Hi there. I have so many things I could say. I'll try and hard to limit it. But I bargained I was on the negotiating team for our local school teachers union for many years. And so much of this shows such little knowledge or understanding of what the process is all about, to say nothing of being totally mean-spirited about the whole thing. Because I don't ever recall, Governor Walker says he doesn't have money to come to the table with, therefore, that's why one of the reasons he's doing all this. In all the years I bargained, I don't ever recall the district coming to us saying, well, we have a pot of money, so let's sit down and talk about it. There's never enough money. There's never enough. It depends where you want to spend it, how you want to allocate it. And if you have a collaborative process, which we were all trained in doing, you bring the parties to the table, you sit down and identify your common goals. And I would venture to say the state workers, the teachers, any labor people, the goals are all the same. We want, you know, Wisconsin to be healthy. We want, you know, people to be as prosperous as they can be, et cetera. Then you sit down and say, and in the lean years, and there were many lean years, We all made compromises. We were all willing to do that. Where in this process, right now, in his proclamations, has he invited anybody to have conversations, sit down at the table, or so on? And I don't hear it. I don't see it. And the way that he's gone about it and the proposals that he's made are just pure and simple regressive. And it's a very sad day for Wisconsin.
Well, he says that we're in a crisis situation, that in order to avoid thousands of layoffs, this needs to happen, and that the state just has nothing to offer. So how can you negotiate when there's just nothing to offer?
Well, first of all, one of the big flaws in this whole argument is that the state and their the ads on TV now and everything else, they've done a real effective job of pitting the state workers and any public employees against, you know, the private, like, we get so much better.
Mm-hmm.
I would dispute that premise. I don't think that that has been shown clearly if you compare apples to apples, for one thing. So I don't believe the, you know, the public employees are on the other side. And that's a very old tactic to use, divide and conquer, and pit one side against the other. And it depends upon where your priorities are. There are many things over many years in Wisconsin where businesses and industry, going back to the tax exemptions for manufacturing and industry, to exclusions for taxes and all kinds of things, where the private sector has benefited. And at least in schools, you know, we were under revenue caps and QEOs for the, and we were the only group that was. So now to say there's no money, there's money. It just depends where you want to put it. And he's made it very clear where he doesn't want to put it.
Bill.
Well, I have 2 points on that subject, and I agree with what the caller says. The biggest difference I noticed when I came into government from the private sector is the way we budget. In the public sector, you start with the revenue projection, and then you hack it up, hack up what you've got among the various constituencies. In the public sector, you start with the budget, the spending, and then you go back and say, okay, now how are we going to raise this money to pay for this? That is a major reason private sector people do not understand the way the public sector works. But that's always been true. It will always be true. The thing that I think, I think I agree with the caller, what we don't do in the general public is we don't itemize well. We don't say, this is where the money is going. We deal with the money as it's an abstraction, and it is coming in to do certain things, and those are the things you should look at. You should say, and it should be itemized like a grocery bill, right down to the last dime, and say, okay, which of these things shouldn't the government be doing? And get consensus on that. Which of these things should get more money, which should get less money? And until we do that and bring the public in, the public is operating largely in the dark or on gross generalizations on the way the government works. And it works in very strange ways and not very simple ways. But the attempt to educate the public and make them make decisions on what we'll do and how for how much would be a huge step forward, I think, in the public-private sector relationship.
Well, it's one of the, you know, and the fact that there is no discussion on this, and it's a quite an important issue that you've blocked out a lot of people, hundreds of thousands of employees in the state, is particularly troublesome. Of course they have a place at the table. I mean, it affects them. And then there is a ripple effect because it will affect children. Yep. It will affect a lot of people. So, well, let's hear what you have to say. Well, that's okay.
Yeah. And as I said earlier, Kathleen, he's got the bit in his teeth, and he is making radical proposals, and he's doing it very fast before the pushback can be created and slow them down. So that's a tactic. And it's very aggressive and very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the two Fitzgerald brothers speak not too long ago, and they said, we got 2 years to live. If we don't do something in 2 years, we're out of here. Those people who put us in are going to go right back after us. So they're operating on that sort of a mentality. So it's a crisis situation. They've created a crisis, and they're riding it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's no doubt about that. The Governor Walker was speaking. I have an article from the Appleton Post Crescent last week, and he said that he will be unveiling specifics of his spending cuts in his two-year state budget plan later this month. He suggested that the certain. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I just got a frog in my throat.
Okay. He suggested that the cuts will be substantial. Do you have an inkling of what those are, Bill?
I have no inkling. I know where they have. If they're going to be substantial, I know where they have to be. But I have no idea what they have in mind or how to do it.
Hmm.
Medicaid is the killer, and you don't have a lot of wiggle room there.
Yeah. Let's pause for a moment and we'll return. Bill Krause is our guest for All Things Political today. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. We just have tons of emails that have come in as well, and I don't think we will be able to get to all of them. I'm very sorry, but we can post them, I think, on Facebook. Can we do that, Chrissy? Yeah, we can do that. We can do that, so we'll do that. In case you want to, and we do want to read and listen to other people's thoughts about this. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill Krause is our guest. He is the former press secretary for Governor Lee Dreyfus. He is a board member of Common Cause, and he is a man who knows this state pretty well. Very well, I might add. 800-486-8655 is the number. Phyllis in Waupaca is our next caller. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I just wanted to say that if the governor is allowed to break the unions, it'll bring everybody's wages down, even the non-union workers in the state, because the unions are the ones that keep the wages up and the benefits. And pretty soon people will be reduced to serfdom. And that's my comment.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, I don't think it'll go that far, but they certainly are going to take a hit. While this initial stages of this process, and you notice that WEAC, the teachers union, has thrown out an olive branch or two. So the people who had the power know they don't have as much. And are going to have to figure out a new way to deal with this this radically changed system.
Here's an email from Steve in Milwaukee. As a senior citizen with limited income, I have to struggle to pay real estate taxes, regressive sales taxes, and now in the city of Milwaukee, the steady increase of user fees. The total municipal take, combining user fees and property taxes, has increased much faster than the consumer price index. It is time for cutbacks. In the city of Milwaukee, employee compensation has been over 80% of the total budget for some years. Steve says, hard to believe people like myself welcome the governor's cutbacks.
Well, and that's representative of quite a number of people. The interesting thing is the way it does fall down into the property tax, because the people who are assessing property taxes are the last ones in line. So if there's a desperate need that has to be filled, they're going to have to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to some serious tax proposals that makes the tax system a lot less dependent on property tax and probably a lot more dependent on consumer taxes.
Hmm.
We have a very low sales tax in this state.
Dave in Menominee, Michigan. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Dave.
This weekend on Meet the Press, John Boehner now is suggesting that we have to make all these cuts to create an environment to create jobs. And you know, we were sold this thing about the tax breaks for 10 years, and all the jobs were created overseas, and now we're being told that the cuts have to come to create jobs. And he also said the government has to be trimmed back, you know, smaller government. So as these corporations get a lot of money, a lot of power, and our government gets smaller, it almost seems now, because the banks have so much money, they're holding it. They don't like this guy in office. We're not going to let the, you know, we're not going to let the economy take off, because they know that the presidential approval ratings run parallel with the economy. And they do seem, it seems now that the government is too small, that the corporations and the banks are too big and too powerful, that they're literally keeping people from getting jobs. They're stopping us. They're not giving the small loans to the small businesses on purpose. They're holding trillions of dollars. So I just wanted to get the guest's thoughts on that.
Well, you take me into a whole new territory. Let me recommend a book to you, it's called 13 Bankers. And the fundamental message of the book is that the banking community has conned all of us into thinking that they are indispensable. If you read that, you'll be as depressed as I am about the prospects. The federal government's problems on the Republican side are different than the problems of the state government, because already Boehner has showed that his caucus is not manageable. Fitzgerald's, so far, have a disciplined, much more disciplined caucus. And if Boehner loses control of that segment of his caucus, then we don't have any majorities. And you can't operate without a majority. I think the federal reaction is going to be much more long-lasting than the state one.
Thanks, Dave, for your call. Kathy in East Troy, hi.
Hello. I will say straight up that I am a proud union member and longtime state employee. That being said, I don't mind that we have to pay more for health insurance. Everybody has to make a sacrifice. However, what truly gripes me is that the people who talk about state employees usually have no clue as to, you know, the types of things we do. I work in a rather dangerous job, or at least it can be. And
what do you do, Kathy? Do you mind saying?
No, I'm a probation and parole agent.
Oh.
And we are expected, of course, to act as attorney, social worker, mother, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I had an interesting conversation with a very conservative relative of mine who had the idea that I was earning approximately $20,000 more than I currently do.
Mm.
The misconception that we are so overpaid that somehow gets across to the general public, they have little clue as to how little some of us have earned, and the fact that state contracts for employment have had zero gains, have had approximately 3% cuts as a result of furlough,
mm-hmm.
and no contracts for years. So I wish that instead of trying to pick the low-hanging fruit, as I know we are, I wish that our governors and legislators would go through with some of and look at some programs and so forth which could be cut and use state employees as the, I don't know, a hunting dog that looks for how to save money.
Mm-hmm. Bill.
You feed into my pet peeve, Kathy. The information the startling thing I found when I came into the government was the information generally is not reliable. You cannot believe the facts that you're given from boiling up on the money. And the other, of course, is that the private sector, a public company in the private sector, in its annual reports and its filings, tells you so much more about what they do, how much money they get, and what they do with it, and how well people are paid than any state agency does. And I think that's an outrage. And I think a lot of the anti-employee reaction is based on mythology, as Kathy does, and better information. At least you'd be dealing off of a solid set of facts instead of feelings and emotions and resentments. So I'm with Kathy.
Here's an email that came in from Jerry Ann. Isn't denying collective bargaining denying freedom of speech by saying unions can't negotiate? Isn't that saying that employees don't have the right to talk to their employer, but that the only right they have is to listen to their employer and accept whatever that employer dictates?
I don't think that's true at all. They have the right. They may not get anywhere, and they have a lot more right when they got some power of a union. The teachers' union has been the 500-pound gorilla for a long time, and everybody listened to them. So that must be a shock to their system to find out that those doors aren't open anymore, and their agenda is no longer at the top of everybody's list. So, but person to person, it's just like any relationship in any employer-employee relationship.
Thanks, Kathy, very much for the call. Oh, we go next to Janet in Rock Springs. Hi, Janet.
Hello. First of all, I doubt if he's going to repair the budget with what he's proposing. I don't think it's going to happen because repairing the budget means the budget is balanced. I don't see how this is going to balance it. But my main comment is I listened to him during his campaigning. He's doing exactly what he promised.
Yep.
People voted against the Democratic Party. I did not. I voted for Tom Barrett. But now they're yelling because they don't like what he's doing. But he is doing what he said he would do. And I don't know why people are so shocked. And they must, you know, they voted for him. The people voted for him and talked to me. I said, it must be what you wanted because you voted for him. And they said, oh, no, we didn't want this.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, this is what you Thank you very much.
I'm as amazed as you are that people are surprised that he told you this is what was going to happen. And it's happening. They may have thought it was all talk. It was just campaign rhetoric. Whoops. Not all talk. He's going to do it. And it's risky. But he's going to do it. No surprises.
Thank you, Janet. Adrian and Blair, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment at the beginning of the show. You had somebody that was talking about the Walker dictatorship. Just letting you know that in my household, he's now Papa Walker. The other comment that I had is I've heard a number of shows where people have called in and expressed that, you know, I'm in the private sector. I've had to take, you know, cuts of this, this, and this.
Why,
you know, the public people should, public unit should have to do the same. And, you know, I'm there. I'm in my own personal recession, and I will, based on the cuts that are proposed in this budget, I will probably lose my job. Even though I work for a private employer, I'm leased to a public entity. My time is paid for privately and then reimbursed through the county system. So I'm going to lose my job over this probably, but I'm not whining about saying I don't. That doesn't make me think that other people should have to take cuts also, or I should say other people can take cuts, but why does that mean you have to take away their collective bargaining rights? I just don't get how they're going about this, how they think that this is going to move us forward in any way. I would like to see, you know, state workers be able to retain their ability to be well paid and well compensated with benefits. And I would like to be able to have that opportunity, not going backwards and say, okay, if I can't have good pay and good benefits, then everybody should have to, should be in my boat.
Thank you, Adrian, for your call. And we'll have to leave it on that. Bill?
Well, I think she's right, and that ultimately what is being done today is not going to solve the big problem. And the judgment of the Walker administration is going to be creating jobs so that she's not at risk. And that's a tough road to hoe.
Yeah. Thank you, sir, very much. Happy Valentine's Day.
And to you, Kathleen, and to Michael. It's a great pleasure all the time.
Yeah, Mike said to say hi to you. So.
Okay.
Thanks, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bill Krause, former press secretary for Governor Lee Dreyfus, our guest this hour. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. This, of course, is a huge issue in the state of Wisconsin, and tomorrow during our program we'll be hearing from opposing sides. We hope to have a debate on this for one of our hours tomorrow. In addition tomorrow to talking about the wonderful Frank Lloyd Wright exhibit at the Milwaukee Art Museum, we had a chance, Christy and Rhonda and I, to see it. It's great. We'll return following the news.